Okay, this quarter we're studying schemes of the devil, and we have been talking for the last couple of weeks about the devil's character. And we're going to continue with that today. We looked at earlier the fact that the devil, part of the devil, or one of the devil's characteristics is his subtleness, his cunningness, his craftiness. And we looked at the account of the Garden of Eden and the temptation of man as he approaches Eve and is very subtle with beginning just asking questions, planting seeds of doubt, and then eventually escalates it into just a lie, just a complete falsehood. And then we continued on and we looked at the account of the temptation of Jesus as he was in the wilderness in the book of Luke in chapter 4. And we looked at the three different temptations, and we also examined 1 John chapter 2 and verse 16. Let's turn there now, if you will, and revisit that. Refresh our minds about what 1 John chapter 2 and verse, we'll start in verse 15 and then read through verse 16. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And so as we think about the world, as we think about who is the prince of the world, who is the god of this world, we think about the devil, we think about Satan. So as we think about the sin that's involved, as the Apostle John says, all that is in the world, it's divided into three different categories: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And we looked at Eve as she was looking at the fruit, that it was good for food, it was good to one's eyes, and it was desirable to make one wise. It fit into all three of those categories. And he also took a look at Jesus and the temptation that we have the account of, anyway, that we could also see similarities in the temptation that the devil had of Jesus. The stones to bread, satisfying the hunger that was in him. He'd not eaten anything for 40 days. The whole kingdoms of the world would be his. And this was where we saw Satan no longer was just planting seeds of doubt, but he just outright lied because he said, "These are mine to control, and I will give them to you." And then the third temptation, taking him to the high pinnacle and saying, you know, if you are who you say you are, cast yourself down and let the angels administer to you or prevent you from falling. So I want to explore a little bit about this lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life. How does the devil use these characteristics to tempt us?
The lust of the flesh can it be used to divert us from our spiritual purpose by focusing on the physical?
Okay, absolutely. It's something, and we're going to talk more about this, but it's something that we can see now. It's a physical thing, right? And when we talk about spiritual warfare, a lot of times man has trouble understanding spiritual things, but they can absolutely understand physical things.
Of warfare, it is a diversion tactic.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. So Luke?
He exploits our human weaknesses. As any enemy, he seeks out to find the weaknesses of his foes, and that's where he attacks. And that's, the devil is a master at it.
Yeah, understanding our weaknesses, understanding what makes us tick, because what influences me, what tempts me may not tempt you, may not tempt someone else, but he knows all of the things in his arsenal to get us to sin, and he's going to use anyone that he can.
Okay. Commercials today attack all three of them, whether it be just a single one in the commercial, or it does a combo attack of two or three of them.
Yeah. So I'd like to consider that. And your point is that in commercials today, whether it be people that we come in contact with, maybe friends, associates, even family members, he uses his agents to bring about these characteristics and these temptations to us today. Very good. Any other comments? Turn now, if you will, to James chapter 2. James chapter 1, I'm sorry. James chapter 1. And when we think about lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, we think about what is lust. Lust is a great longing for the forbidden, something that we're not allowed to have. The root word carries with it the idea of to set your heart upon. So I want you to think about that as we consider over the next few minutes about lust and how lust affects us. It's something that we set up. It's a great longing. We set our heart on it. It's our main focus. We can't get it out of our mind. And it's always there. So with that, let's read verse beginning in verse 12 of James chapter 1. It says, "Blessed is the man who endures temptation. For when he has been proved, he will receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to those who love him. Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God,' for God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death." So here we see James is characterized in sin. He involves temptation, he involves lust, he involves enticement. So when we think about, especially in verse 12, I'd like to start there. Blessed are the man who endures temptation. What is the reward for somebody who endures temptation?
The crown of life.
Eternal life. Okay. So why is it, if we know that that is the prize, if that is the reward, why is it so hard to endure it?
Because it's not right here.
Okay.
You have to have that faith, that trust in God, know that reward's there waiting for you. But man, it's one of our infirmities. We have to be able to touch it, feel it, see it.
Okay, why are credit cards, let's use a modern day example, why are credit cards so enticing to people?
When you spend money, you don't see it going out of your account. You don't see it like spending cash, so you don't feel the pain.
Okay.
Until, you know, later on.
That's one way. I can tell by your answer, your thoughts on finances, but that's a good thought to have. I'm thinking about something else.
It lets you get things now that you don't have the money for.
Yeah, I'm thinking about all of the people that don't have the money in their account. And I can get a credit card and I can worry about paying it later. I'll just make small payments on it because I want it now. I want it today. I don't want to wait until I save up the money. I want to have it now. And this is the way that sin does for us. So the promise is blessed are those, happy are those who endure temptation. So if you can resist these fleshly lusts, if you can resist these things, now you have a greater reward down the road. But it's very difficult for man, as Brother Duke said, because you can touch it now, you can taste it now, you can feel it now, and man is a very physical being at this point. So it's that war that's going on between the physical and the spiritual. So James?
Yeah, Cole, sorry. But I think it has to do with what you feed into as well. If you feed the spirit, then the spirit can be strong and resistant. But if you constantly are bombarded by the things of this world and you feed the things into your mind, then it becomes more difficult.
Absolutely. And that's why he's saying set your heart upon spiritual things. Very good.
Think about the temptations and lust that you just talked about. You look at what happened in the garden there with the Eve and other men that's been tempted with sin. It don't take very long, you know what I'm saying? So it's not like your lust has to dwell on something for a long time. It could be a weakness of ours that I present something to you very quickly. You know, you don't think about it too long, you just react to it.
Yeah.
Kind of like, you know, I don't think Satan worked on Eve too hard or too long in the Garden of Eden. You know, I don't think David was worked on too long when he saw Bathsheba. I'm just saying sometimes it can flash before you. It's a weakness of yours, and you react to it.
Yeah.
It takes discipline.
Because the longer you take, the more you think about it and you realize the consequences, right? Excellent point. So let's look at verse 13 quickly. No one say, when he is tempted, I'm tempted by God. We learn from that temptation doesn't come from God. God doesn't give temptation to man. The temptation is there because of man himself. And it's a vehicle that the devil uses to get you to sin. And so he goes on to explain in verse 14 that each one is tempted when he was drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So let's understand what the word tempted means. What do we, when we say when someone is tempted, what are we saying? Are we saying that they sin because they were tempted?
No. Temptation's
not a sin.
Okay. All right. There has to be an action to the temptation.
Yeah, so what are we saying when we say it, when we say someone is tempted? Okay, it's a test, isn't it? It's a trial. The Greek word means to test, to try, to try whether a thing can be done, to attempt it, to experiment, to try a man's faithfulness, his integrity, and his virtue. This is what temptation is. This is what it means to be tempted. So it doesn't mean that you've fallen into sin, but now it's before you. The test is on. And now you have to make a decision on what you're going to do. So then, he's tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. So when we talked about lust, when we mentioned lust, we said that's a longing for. Longing for something that's forbidden. That's a strong desire. So when we think about he's drawn away by his own lust and he's enticed, what do we mean enticed? Now enticement enters into the equation.
It's kind of like something you want.
Okay, something that you want.
Does it mean the conditions are right for us to fall?
Okay, I think so. I think the enticement carries with it the idea of being trapped. Now, you followed that lust, that longing for, and it puts us in a situation that we can sin because now we've become trapped. We're trapped with the allurement of that sin, of that temptation. Okay, so then it goes on to say, then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. So when the Greek word here in conceived means to clasp or to seize, to be seized. So as you see the progression as we're talking about how you can start with something, the test itself, the temptation, and draw itself all the way to death. And so then when desire had conceived, it brings birth, gives birth to sin, and sin when it is full grown brings forth death. So what death is this talking about, James talking about here? It's a spiritual death. So you see how you started out with just the temptation, the test itself, not the desire, but just the fact that it was there before you. And if you didn't fight against that temptation, then all of a sudden now you've come to spiritual death. And that's what happened to Eve, because she gave in. Questions or comments? Hey, Luke.
1 Corinthians 10:12 also shows us that God has given us a way to escape that temptation.
Yes.
He's not going to read
that, Brother Duke. That's a good passage.
Okay, it says 1 Corinthians 10:12-13. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you except such as common to man, but God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it.
Yeah. So every temptation, there's a way of escape for man. Yes, Sharon.
I delete that part of the Lord's Prayer because it says, lead us not into temptation. And God doesn't do that in the first place. I never say that part of it.
Okay. All right, very good. Brother Kenneth?
Man likes to see and touch things to know what the results are.
Yeah.
And that's the reason God sent Jesus in the flesh here, to show in the physical sense of how we direct our spiritual life.
Yeah. And isn't it a wonderful example, the fact that because we are a physical race, that God sent His Son physically to be here to endure those temptations that we're faced with every day. Excellent point, excellent example. All right, let's look at an example in the Old Testament of this in action. Turn to 2 Samuel chapter 13. This is during the time of David's reign, 2 Samuel chapter 13. We see, of course, the sin with Bathsheba back in chapter 12. Created all kinds of problems for David, even with his son Absalom. But there's another part that we see in chapter 13, I think, as a result of the sin with Bathsheba, and it's with his children. And so let's read the first five verses of chapter 13. Now, after this, it was so that Absalom, the son of David, had a lovely sister whose name was Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was so distressed over his sister Tamar that he became sick, for she was a virgin, and it was improper for Amnon to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. Now Jonadab was a very crafty man, one of the devil's agents, right, that we've been talking about. And he said to him, Why are you the king's son becoming thinner day after day? Will you not tell me? And Amnon said to him, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. So Jonadab said to him, lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. And when your father comes to see you, say to him, please let my sister Tamar come and give me food and prepare the food in my sight that I may see it and eat it from her hand. So Amnon is faced with temptation. What's the temptation? What's the test? The beauty of his sister Tamar and his desire for her. Okay, so as we see, let each one say when he is tempted, he's not tempted by God. So temptation, and he's drawn away by his own lust, his own desires. So what was the strong desire? And how strong was it? Verse 2.
It was really strong. He wasn't eating.
Yeah.
This is all he thought about. He was depressed.
It was tearing him up. That he wanted this so bad, and his mind was on it constantly, to the point where it distressed him so much he couldn't eat, he couldn't sleep. That's all he thought about. Okay? So now we see him falling down that path that James is talking about in James chapter 1. So we go on, and what's the next stage is that he's drawn away by his own lust and enticed. What's the enticement? What's the entrapment?
He tries to set the conditions so he can act on his lust.
He had some help, didn't he? Along comes Jonadab, one of his trusted friends, his confidant. Jonadab helps him hatch out a plan, doesn't he, on how he's going to achieve this. And we can see later on in 2 Samuel chapter 13 that he goes through with it. The plan is hatched. He becomes entrapped. The plan is conceived. It's grasped. He follows through, and Tamar comes. He lays with her. And then what's the end result of this situation? What happens to Amnon in the end?
He's killed.
He gets killed, doesn't he? So in this case, brings forth death. Although it's talking about in James spiritual death, it brought physical death for Amnon in this case. So this is how temptation can escalate and progress into sin, from all the enticements, from all the lusting, the longing for, the desiring, till you finally grasp it. And it's there. Any questions or comments?
Jacob? Just kind of thinking, even what we read back in James 1 and verse 12 about the the crown of life. It says that God has promised that to those who love him. And this is kind of this morning's sermon about, you know, our love for God. Even here in 2 Samuel 13, you know, Amnon says in verse 4 that he says, I am in love with Tamar. But you come down to verse 15, and after he has committed this sin, he hates her. With a greater hatred than the love that he had supposedly for her. But really, I think he was in love with himself. You know, he was, I mean, that's really what, you know, the devil puts an opportunity for us to fulfill our own desires and to really love ourselves rather than loving God.
Absolutely.
And that gets to the heart of, I think, really all sin. Yeah. We make a choice that we're going to love ourselves, we're going to please ourselves.
I want it now. Absolutely. Excellent point. And it wasn't love, it was lust. He was in lust with her. Good point. Anybody else? Okay, let's go now to John chapter 8 and look at another characteristic of the devil. And we looked at this passage before, and Jesus is talking here to the Pharisees. And he says in verse 44, "You are of your father the devil, and the desires of your father you want to do. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own resources, for he is a liar and the father of it." So we see Jesus, as he's talking about the devil, as he's talking about Satan, he says that he is the father of lies. So where did lies come from?
Came from Satan.
What's that?
Came from Satan.
It came from Satan. What was the first lie?
She told Eve that she wouldn't.
You shall not surely die. Right. And so because of that, the lie hatched, or the lie began, and because it was from the devil, he is the father of lies. And so that's part of his character. That's what when he speaks, he's speaking lies. Why do people
sins that God hate, you know, hates a lying tongue?
Yeah, absolutely.
A proud look, lying tongue.
Lying tongue. So why is it that people believe a lie? They want to. And it ties back to what Jacob was talking about. Maybe he'll get into that in his sermon a little bit later on this morning. They want to believe it because it fits with them. Because of the selfishness, maybe. Because of love of self. But the devil's a master at lying and using lies to deceive us because it's so easy for us to believe them because we want to believe them. Okay? Let me give an example of how easy it is to believe a lie. And I'm going to use myself as the example. So let's say you have a friend, maybe that you work with or that you get together with every so often, and you're having lunch with them, and you guys are talking, and you see me, I come up, say hello, we shake hands, how you doing, and then I leave. And so your friend says, "Well, who was that?" I said, "Oh, that's Brother Sullivan. He's we go to worship together. He's an elder over there where I attend." He said, "He's an elder?" He says, "I thought you guys didn't believe in gambling." He says, "I see him buying lottery tickets all the time." So what's the first thing that comes into your mind when you hear that from this person that you know, you spent some time with? What? Are you sure it was him? Are you sure that's the same person? And then the devil starts working on your mind and you start thinking, well, why would this guy say that if it wasn't true? Is he mistaken? Oh, no, I see him all the time. He's at the little store there that I stop at in the mornings to get my coffee, and he's in front of me in the line, and I see him leaving with the lottery ticket. I can't believe he would do something like that. So what's your next step now? Okay. All right. Okay. Yeah. I mean, if you know the person, then you just dismiss it. There's something going on there that either this guy's mistaken, it's the wrong person, because I know that he would never do that. Or you go and you say, okay, let's get to the bottom of this. Sister Sharon?
Working because he's using gossip.
Gossip, okay, yeah. Yeah. So your next step is you come to me and say, what's going on? This guy, he says that I was having lunch with the other day. He sees you down over at the store buying lottery tickets, and like, no, I never bought a lottery ticket in my life. You know me, don't you? You know who I am. Do you think I would be doing something like that? So I've got to be careful not to take offense when the accusation's made, right? But that's how the devil does, is he likes to lob those accusations and plant that seed of doubt. So now you go back to your friend and you say, something's got to be going on because he's not doing it, and I don't know what you're seeing. And your friend says, well, I'm getting my coffee, and there's three or four people. It's jackpot day, and he's there in line with all these people, and they're getting their tickets, and they're buying their stuff, and they're leaving. And he goes up there, and he gets his ticket, and he sticks it in his wallet every day, and goes on out, gets his drink, and leaves. Because I'm stopping there to buy my Diet Sundrop, by the way. It's the only place they have them. What's that? Okay. But I'm not going to do it if you're there. So then you come back to me and you say, okay, this is what he saw. And you're like, oh, I know what it is. He's watching me tuck my receipt down, because when I travel, I keep my receipts. And so now it becomes a habit. Anytime I buy something, whether I'm buying gas for my own personal car or getting something at the grocery store, I'm tucking my receipts out of habit. And then when I get home from my travels, I take my receipts out and turn in my expense report. And it's in there with all my travel expenses. So he's seeing me take a receipt that I'm getting from my purchase and putting it in my wallet. But the devil has planted the seed. And he had to go through all of that to figure out, well, what's going on. And he plants that seed of doubt. Because people want to believe the lie. It's human nature. Questions or comments?
By his family, his friends, he's like, hey, you must have done something, because what would this be happening to you?
Yeah.
That's why people believe him, but they think they want to believe the worst.
As a matter of fact, look at what's going on in the news today, and I have no idea whether any of it's true or not, but all of the allegations that are flying around may very well be true, but they could just as well not be true. And it's somebody planting the seed. And whether they're true or not, okay, and I'm sure you've all been through this before when an accusation is made, whether they're true or not, if they are true, then it comes out through the process. If they're not true, it takes a long time to get through that process. And even when you've proven that they're not true, there's still that seed of doubt in that person's mind. Because everybody always believes the first thing they hear. I can't tell you how many times in the workplace when something was said in a meeting with no facts about something, and it sticks in that person's mind, even when you bring the facts to them and show them, 6 months down the road, they're bringing it up the way they heard it originally, not with the facts that were given. Sister Kathy, and then I think there were...
You mentioned that you have to be careful in that situation to not take offense. It also causes great damage to a relationship, our spiritual relationship as brethren in the Lord. So even if it is proven to not be true, it can still cause great damage.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what the devil wants,
yeah.
Right? Because now he has us worrying about that, worrying amongst each other, instead of doing what we should be doing, and that's going out and spreading the gospel. We're having to deal with things internally now. So he's won either way, if we get to that point. Okay, I think Brother James and then Jacob.
So as far as why that we would believe a lie, it's because we want to, and on the other side, it's because we don't trust what the Bible says to be true either.
Yes, and it goes back to what you said earlier. As we progress down the spiritual road and getting closer to God, the closer we get to God, the less it's going to the harder it's going to be to believe that lie or to automatically assume that. So there is a progression there. And when we talk about our spiritual journey and becoming closer to God and being God-like, the closer we are to Him, the harder it is to believe the lie. So good point.
Just thinking about in our time today, even though so many people believe truth is relative, that maybe one absolute truth in our culture is that perception is reality.
Perception is reality.
And like you say, even if it's something that's proven to be wrong or right, eventually, usually it's the first thought that somebody has in their mind, the first thing you see that the media puts out, whatever it is, that's what sticks in someone's mind.
Yeah. Whether it's true or not, perception is reality. And we see that from the politicians with all the accusations. Now it's into the movie industry. We see it just up the road into the sports and the college sports, the accusations that are going around. And nothing's been proven yet, but just because somebody said it, or might have even been talking about somebody else, but because that seed's been planted. Now, whether it's true or not, that will always be with that person. And all the good that they've done will be forgotten. Kurt?
When I was in my 20s, back when Magnolia Bank in E-Town was a Burger King, there was a young man in there that was about my age who looked exactly like me. And people would come up to me all the time and say, "Hey, why you hanging out in Burger King in E-Town and all that?" And someone come up to me and said, "Hey, when'd you start smoking?" And I was like, "I've never smoked a day in my life." And so, people look like people. So you've got to watch and make sure, who you're accusing of what,
That's an excellent point, and if there's one thing that we can take away from this morning is the brothers and sisters in here, my encouragement to you is, if somebody says something, if somebody makes an accusation about it, don't just jump to conclusions and think that person's guilty. Yeah, Eddie mentioned it a minute ago. It depends on how serious it is, obviously. If it's serious enough that you need to confront that person, just go to them and ask them. And listen, I don't have anything against you. I love you as a brother or sister. I just want to ask. And then if you're asked about it, then don't take the offense, because we're just trying to get to the bottom of it. And then just like we see in 2 Corinthians with the man who was withdrawn from because of the infidelity and sleeping with his father's wife, we need to move past it. Once things are fixed, if sin was involved, and repentance was made, we need to move past it. Okay, Brother Mark, and then we'll come back.
I just tying all this into your example, as Sharon mentioned it about the gossiping. There's so many things that the Satan has power to control. He can, just this one example you're using, gossip can come out of it. That's a sin. Going back to what Sister Kathy was saying about. You might be offended by it, so you could let that just take you over where you think that you don't like that person anymore. You might not have a relationship with that person anymore in a good way. Just so many things can happen where I don't know what his characteristic is, whether he can feel joy in doing something like that or not. But in his misery, he's probably having a lot better
feeling about things because he's touched so many people in so many different ways with just one little thing that has happened in a group of people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Well, Kerry?
Yes, I'm going to say something the same. It's like a snowball effect, you know, so the snowball rolls, it gets bigger and bigger, takes more people down as it goes down the road. Another thing I was thinking about, which, you know, you guys were talking about, was the church is a family, right? We talk about this as our spiritual family. So when most of the time in your family, when you know something's going on, what do? You do nothing or you go talk to them. So it would be the same thing in a church family. Yeah. You would expect me or you, where you come talk to me or vice versa, correct?
Yeah.
And you want me to help you out because I love you. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. So right. Same thing in a family relationship. That's the way the church is supposed to be. So it shouldn't be too hard for us to talk to each other.
Right. Don't let the devil win. Don't let him divide you as a family, either a spiritual family or a physical family. Brother Kenneth?
Todd, before we accuse of anybody, there's an example of a farmer coming out of, who's a member of the church, out of a liquor store with some bottles of liquor. Well, checking into it, they'd seen him coming out. He was coming out. But he was using the liquor for lambing. They, like whiskey, they didn't know the purpose of why he was buying it, so that's important. You need to know what you're accusing somebody of before.
Okay.
That, but he was using it for lambing. I know nothing about farming, but it was good for when they was lambing that the whiskey would relax the animal or whatever. So we need to know what we're accusing him of, even though he was there.
Yeah. If it doesn't look right, absolutely. Hey, you know, I saw you doing this. What was going on? So don't be afraid to talk to that person. And for sure, don't spread it around. You know, follow Matthew 19 and go to that brother. Talk to him. Okay, turn over to 1 John chapter 5. Let's look at another characteristic of the devil. We'll begin in verse 18. We know that whoever is born of God does not sin, but he who has been born of God keeps himself, and the wicked one does not touch him. So it ties into what James was talking about earlier. If we follow after God, we love God, we want to do His will. If we're of God, then we're not going to give in to the wicked one. We're not going to give in to the lies that come along. Verse 19, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one, or the evil one. So this idea of this character of the devil, evil or wicked, the Greek word there means bad, evil, grievous, harm, lewd, malicious, or wickedness. And so there's a term being used by some of the politicians now, pure evil, used to describe somebody. I can't think of a better person that term pure evil could be used on than the devil himself. Because when you think of evil, you think of the devil. Or when you think of the devil, you think of evil. Turn to Matthew chapter 13. And verse 19. Matthew chapter 13 and verse 19. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. This is he who received the seed by the wayside. So when Jesus is talking about the parable of the soils and those who would give in to the wicked ones, talking about the devil and the fact that he was wicked. We go down to verse 38. He's continuing on in parables. And this is a parable of the tares. And it talks about the sowers sowing the wheat and the tares coming up in the wheat. Verse 38, the field is the world, the good seeds are the sons of the kingdom, but the tares are the sons of the wicked one. So talking about those who would do evil are sons of the devil, sons of the wicked one. How long is the devil going to try to get us to sin? Till we die. He's not going to stop, is he? Turn to Revelation chapter 12. We looked at this several weeks ago. We're talking about the spiritual warfare that goes on between good and evil, but between God and his angels and God and his army and the devil and his army. And we see in verse 10 the description of the war, the spiritual war that's going on. And verse 10 of chapter 12 says, "Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength in the kingdom of our God, the power of his Christ has come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down." So the devil is going to work day and night. He's going to work on us day and night. He's never going to give up until we die. Go over to Luke chapter 4, back to Luke chapter 4 that we were studying from, the temptation of Jesus Christ. And this particular account is interesting because as we get down to the end of the temptation, and we get down to verse 13, it says, "Now when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time." So had the devil given up on tempting Jesus after these 40 days and 40 nights, and the three that we read about here in Luke chapter 4? Okay.
Yeah. He's going to quit attacking us. Yeah. He's going to use a different angle, a different technique. You know, if we're strong in one area, it's like if we look at warfare. You never attack your enemy from his strength, you attack him from his weakness.
Yeah. In the case of Jesus, when it says he left for a more opportune time, he's waiting for us to show weakness. And that's when he's going to come after us, is when we're at our weakest. All right? Yep. Could be difficult times that you're going through. Could be a change in life situation that he's after. But rest assured, he has not given up. So if he's not tempting you right now, doesn't mean he's not going to. Doesn't mean that he's through with you. That he's not going to quit trying. So when we look at Job chapter 1 and verse 7, of course we know it says there in verse 6, "There was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, Whence comest thou? And then Satan answered the Lord, saying, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." So what can we gain from the character of the devil from that passage in Job about what the devil was doing and about his character? He's always looking, going to and fro, walking up and down. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil as a roaring lion walketh about, seeking whom he may devour." I think that also gets into the character of the devil and tells you a little bit about him. He's always looking. He's always roaming around like that lion, looking for the weak, to prey on the weak, for whoever he can get to. He's not going to stop. He's not going to stop trying. He's going to keep trying until he has no more opportunity. And that's when we leave this earth through death. Questions or comments? Okay, we finished lesson 2. We'll start with lesson 3 next week. Thank you for your comments this morning, participation.